This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for November 13th, 2017. On today's show, we're going to be talking about a bunch of news, including the Louis C.K. situation. We're going to be talking about Quentin Tarantino's next film, Lord of the Rings TV show. Amazon developing a free ad-supported streaming service. Another Spider-Man spinoff in development at Sony. And we'll talk about early buzz from Justice League and The Punisher. And in the water cooler, we'll be talking about a ton of stuff. This is Peter Serretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film senior writer Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's up?
And back after a two-week vacation is Slash Film writer Y-Tran Bui.
Hey, everyone. I'm back. I'm jet lagged, but I'm tan.
Yeah, we missed you. So tell us about your trip. What have you been up to?
Yeah, so I was in Thailand for 2 weeks, actually for about 1.5 weeks, after which I went to Hong Kong for 3 days. And this is a trip I've been planning for a while with my cousin and one of her friends. We've been planning to go to the Lantern Festival in Chiang Mai. And this is an annual festival they have, which is, I sent it to the group Slack. It's where people release the lanterns into the sky that are powered by fire and everything. And
yeah,
if anybody's seen
Tangled
gorgeous.
From Disney, then you've seen yes. something like that.
Yes, exactly. So we went to Bangkok, Chiang Mai, Phuket, and then I was in Hong Kong for 3 days. And it was a great time in which I ate a lot and I sweated a lot of that out and just met a lot of cool people. I stayed mostly in hostels, which was kind of a new experience for me. But it was a lot of fun just like meeting people as we were going along and definitely seeing different aspects of life I haven't noticed. Although I realize that Thailand, a lot of the culture and the food is very similar to Vietnam. Even the language itself sounded somewhat like Vietnamese. So I was kind of thrown for a little bit. I was like, oh, okay, they're not speaking Vietnamese, but it sounds a lot like it. Yeah, the food was great. I ate a lot of spicy food, which I handled. I only had one dish where I only had 3 bites and I could not eat anything else.
Wow.
But otherwise, I was very proud of myself.
Any interesting like culture shock or, you know, surprising differences over there?
Well, you know, there's a lot of warnings about getting scammed in Thailand. And I'm glad to say that we did not get scammed. Let's see, culture shock. I guess it's like I've been to Vietnam before, so it's somewhat similar to Vietnam in that like there aren't many rules of the road. You kind of just have to cross whenever you see a gap or just start walking and the cars will stop for you, which is very terrifying. But you get used to it, I guess. I just kind of would walk behind my friends. Like as soon as I was on the side where the cars were coming in, I would walk around them to make sure that if we got crashed into, they would have nice buffer for me so I wouldn't die immediately.
Any encounters with pop culture or movies or television over there?
So when I was in Hong Kong, we went to the Gallery of Stars, which is where they have their sort of their version of the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And there was a picture of Chow Yun-fat that I took a picture of and tweeted. And there's a fun Bruce Lee statue there. Very cool. It was a good time. I don't know if there's anything.
Is it quite as touristy as our Walk of Fame in Hollywood?
Not as touristy, but they were under renovation, so there wasn't a lot of people there. Yeah, it was a lot of food and a lot of sun, so I had a fun time.
Yesterday was November 12th, which is the day that Hill Valley's famous lightning storm, but it's also the day that I was born. So it was my birthday over the weekend. I did a bunch of stuff, including I ate at Outback Steakhouse because I've been on a diet for a while now, and I've had a craving for blooming onions. I'm not sure if you've ever had that, but it's probably like the worst thing you could possibly eat. And, and my table shared two of them, and it was amazing. Even though it's a chain restaurant, it made me happy. I went to DesignerCon, which is this convention in Pasadena, where it's basically like the artist alley of Comic-Con, but it's just that. So it's like a huge convention with just artists, and you're supporting them. You know, you're buying stuff from the actual artists themselves, and it's a lot of, you know, cool pop culture stuff. I was shocked. My girlfriend Kitra was shocked that there was not one thing of the Porgs from The Last Jedi. Like I felt like that was going to be everywhere, but the two things that we saw everywhere were Stranger Things was like everywhere you looked, and It, Pennywise from It, was everywhere you looked. Was, you know, someone had a drawing or print or something from It. Of course, I went to the Magic Castle for my birthday because as a member, I get a free dinner, appetizer, dessert, and that was fun. Although my birthday always falls on Veterans Week to align with Veterans Day, which is, I mean, it's cool. I like Veterans Day, but at the Magic Castle, that means that they have Veterans Week, which is just all veterans doing magic, which, no offense to any veterans, but usually the selection they have when I go to the Magic Castle on Veterans Week is not, you know, as exciting as it normally is. So, yeah, there's that. This past week I didn't get to talk about this, but I got to see Coco for a second time. I don't think I ever talked about that on the podcast. Pixar's new animated film. I really enjoyed it the second time. I can tell you both times it made me cry. I'm not sure it's, you know, in their top third of best films of, you know, that studio, but it's definitely something that I think you should seek out. And, you know, I didn't really know much about Day of the Dead beyond, you know, kind of the surface level stuff, and it was really interesting. Like, those aspects of the film I think are very interesting and eye-opening, and I feel more cultured having seen this Disney film, I guess. Maybe not in so much as, like, you know, how Moana I think cultures people, but I really enjoyed it. Ben, what have you been up to?
Awesome. Well, happy birthday, Peter.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Last night I had a chance to go to the AFI Fest premiere of The Disaster Artist, which is a movie that I've already seen, but I loved, and I could not pass up the opportunity to go see it again on the big screen. And it was great. It was at the TCL Chinese Theater, so it's like, you know, a full-on Hollywood experience. There's an after party at the Hollywood Roosevelt right across the street, and you know, you're in there with, you know, James Franco and Seth Rogen and all the people who are, you know, starring in the film and all that. So it's sort of like one of those swanky Hollywood party experiences, which was pretty sweet. Tommy Wiseau, who is the subject of The Room, or the writer, director, producer, star of The Room, which is like who James Franco plays in The Disaster Artist. Tommy Wiseau and Greg Sestero, who is also the co-star of The Room, were both there in attendance, and they came down and did like a, you know, were introduced before the movie started and all that stuff, and everybody sort of went nuts. I just really quickly just wanted to mention again how much I love The Disaster Artist. I cannot say enough good things about it. One quick thing is the first time I watched it, I was sort of mesmerized, so mesmerized by James Franco's performance that I feel like I wasn't really paying close enough attention to Dave Franco's performance, and that's his younger brother who plays Greg Sestero in the movie. And this time, I was able to sort of focus in a little bit more on that. And Dave Franco does incredible work in this movie. I think it's going to be overshadowed by James as, you know, we get closer to award season and all that kind of stuff. But do not sleep on Dave Franco in this movie. He is doing really, really great work. And it's as good as what James is able to do, but just in a totally different way. He basically just plays like a straight man in a movie that has some pretty crazy characters in it. And that, you know, comes along with its own set of challenges. And I just don't want people to overlook Dave Franco's work in this movie because it's really tremendous. So definitely go see The Disaster Artist, you know, at your earliest convenience, because it's an amazing movie.
Now that you've seen it multiple times, is it as rewatchable as The Room?
Yes, I think so. I actually liked it a lot better the second time, and I loved it the first time. And I think it's because you get the Room experience without actually having to go through the torture that is watching The Room. So yeah, I would definitely say it's as rewatchable for sure.
And I forgot to mention, I tweeted a bunch of photos from DesignerCon. So if you want to see some of the art, some of the best pop culture art that I found at DesignerCon, go to my account on Twitter, that's @/home. By the way, I ran into a bunch of artists at the DesignerCon that listened to this podcast and, you know, were just praising it. And I want to thank everybody who, you know, said nice things about the podcast and also wished me a happy birthday over the weekend. Thank you all. Let's get to the news, though, because we have a lot to talk about. First up, we didn't really get to talk about because we had an emergency episode on Thursday night and we didn't have an episode on Friday. We didn't really get to talk about this Louis C.K. stuff. So, Ben, what is going on with Louis C.K.?
Yes. So on Friday, a New York Times report came out in which five women came forward and accused comedian Louis C.K. of sexual misconduct, saying that he either masturbated in front of them or asked if he could. This has been going on for years and years and has been sort of like Harvey Weinstein, one of those sort of open secrets, I guess, in the comedy world for a long time. These sort of allegations about Louis C.K.'s behavior have been, you know, whispered about behind closed doors, but nobody has ever actually come forward before. And that all changed on Friday with this New York Times report. You know, all these women came forward, and actually, I think four of them came forward and put their names to their accusations, and one of them remained anonymous. And I think it was next day.
What kind of accusations are they? We should probably.
So, yeah, that basically that he masturbated in front of them or asked if he could, you know, like masturbated during phone calls with them, like really sort of disgusting stuff. So Louis C.K. actually released a statement, and unlike, you know, Brett Ratner, who's denying the allegations against him, Louis C.K., I think, is the first person to come forward and say that, you know, these stories are true. That is his quote from his statement that he released in the aftermath of this report. And so, yeah, he's basically admitting that all of these things that he's, you know, accused of doing, he actually did them. I think for the Kevin Spacey scenario, he was like, I don't quite remember if I did that. If I did, I'm sorry. But Louis C.K. is like, I did this. I apologize. So you can read his apology and all of that stuff if you care about doing that. He has since, the fallout from this has been pretty swift. He has a movie coming out, or it had a movie coming out called I Love You Daddy, which has been canceled by The Orchard, which is the distribution company. Netflix has canceled the plans to release a second original stand-up special with him, and HBO has removed him from an upcoming event called Night of Too Many Stars, which is a benefit show. FX has severed all ties with Louis C.K. and his production company, and TBS has suspended production on an animated series that he's working on. So this has been, you know, the industry is just, the dominoes are falling very, very quickly on this, and especially because he's outright admitted that this stuff has happened. The animated movie has fired him from that production. The sequel. It doesn't have an official title yet, but The Secret Life of Pets 2. Louis C.K., who provided the voice for the main character in the first movie, will not be coming back for the second film.
But I had no idea these allegations against Louis C.K. and it seems like a lot of people in the comedy community did know about that. It is disgusting. It seems like now Louis C.K. has been, everything has been taken away from Louis C.K. at this point, which is a show of the times. Like, I feel like Hollywood is really becoming reactionary to this, which is good. I don't know. H.T., do you have any thoughts on this?
Just that, yeah, like that Ben said, the floodgates are opening, and this is just the beginning of, I'm sure, of a exposure of widespread systemic harassment and abuse in the industry, not just in Hollywood, but everywhere else. So it's disheartening to read these stories every day, but they are necessary, I think, to bringing sort of justice or bringing some sort of recompense to the victims of these men and their careers that were lost in the process.
Yeah, and as a consumer of entertainment, I feel like it's harder. I think it hits you harder. It hits me harder when it's someone that, you know, whose work I admire, unlike, you know, a Brett Ratner. it's like, oh my God, this guy I liked was such a scumbag. It's so many conflicting feelings about it. It's weird. His statement is probably the most well-written out of anybody that has been accused thus far. But at the same time, it's weirdly void of, like, an apology.
Yeah, I was about to point that out. I don't think he actually straight out apologized for his actions. He said he was remorseful, but he never said sorry to the victims themselves.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And I've seen a lot of people sort of praising his response, but the point is that this is some pretty messed up stuff, and I don't know if, like, praising a response is the best move in these times. He says that he's going to basically just, like, step back and spend time listening. I'm going to take a long time to listen, he says. So I don't know what that means. It probably means that he's not going to be working for a long time. I don't know if he's going to end up in jail because he admitted to, I think, what is a criminal act. I don't know. This story is still sort of developing, and we'll keep you guys posted if there's any other updates.
For sure. But this is going to keep on going. I think the dominoes are going to continue to fall. I think, I honestly think this. We're just seeing the beginning. We're seeing the tip of the iceberg. I think, you know, this year, this coming year is going to be very interesting and sad. We're going to see a lot of our heroes, I think. We're going to hear a lot of stories. Not that I know of any. I just have a feeling. And yeah. We'll keep you updated on the podcast and on the site. But next up in the news, Quentin Tarantino's next movie we had heard was about Charles Manson. But apparently, that's kind of a little too specific. He says it's more about 1969. Ben, what do we know about this?
Yeah, that's actually his exact quote. Is he said, it's not Charles Manson. It's not Charles Manson. It's 1969. So that is basically what we know about his movie. And that, you know, the specificity of the Charles Manson story, I think, you know, it got people excited because that's a recognizable story. It's, you know, this insane, truly crazy thing that if you don't really know that much about, I would highly recommend listening to the Karina Longworth's You Must Remember This podcast. She did a whole series of super in-depth episodes about, tracking the entire thing, the rise of Manson and his followers, and then the murders that occurred in the late 60s. So, that is an interesting story in and of itself. But I think the concept of Tarantino widening his scope to encompass the entire year instead of just laser focusing in on this one particular event that happened is a lot more interesting. And, it opens the doors for him to explore all sorts of different things and maybe make comments on all sorts of different things instead of just this one, sort of contained element. So, again, we don't know the name of the movie that he's working on. We don't know which studio is going to be distributing it because he's previously worked with the Weinstein Company and he is, you know, now shopping this new script around to different studios. We've heard some rumors that Margot Robbie and Leonardo DiCaprio and Samuel L. Jackson and I think maybe Brad Pitt might be in the ensemble cast, but no deals are signed as far as we know yet. So there's much more to come on this. But as of right now, we just know that the scope is being expanded a little bit to the entire year 1969, not just the Charles Manson story.
Yeah, it says in this article, it theorizes that basically, you know, this might be as much, you know, as Inglourious Basterds was a movie about Hitler, this is a movie about Charles Manson. You know, it isn't really, you know.
Yeah, he's a supporting player, kind of.
Yeah. I'm very excited for this movie because, you know, I'm a fan of Quentin Tarantino, and, you know, for a while there he was doing, you know, World War II movies and Westerns, and, you know, I really love him in kind of like the 1960s, 1970s area of, you know, in Los Angeles. I feel like that's where he is strongest in my mind. So I'm excited for this movie. HT, do you have any thoughts on a Quentin Tarantino doing a movie about 1969?
Yeah, I'm also really excited. I'm a big Tarantino fan too, so I'm fascinated by how he'll tackle everything that happened in 69, not just in Hollywood, but everything that was happening politically with all the assassinations. It's definitely a year that was rife with just turmoil and events. So he, I think, will have fun. And I think he might also make more homages to one of his favorite sort of influences, which is like French New Wave, which was like 69 was also the golden era of that. So I think this movie will be really interesting.
For sure. That era, I think, has a style that is complementary to the style of Quentin Tarantino. Moving on. I think we talked last week about the possibility of a Lord of the Rings TV show at Amazon, and now it is official. Ben, what do we know?
Yeah, so just a few days ago, that announcement came out that Amazon was in talks with the estate of J.R.R. Tolkien to adapt the Lord of the Rings into a TV series. That is definitely official. Amazon made a full announcement this morning. They said, here's the description straight from a press release they sent out. Set in Middle-earth, the television adaptation will explore new storylines preceding J.R.R. Tolkien's The Fellowship of the Ring. The deal includes a potential additional spinoff series. So we don't know who is creatively involved with this show yet. I don't think there is anyone attached at this point. We know that the rights to the Lord of the Rings name, property, what have you, are said to be in the $200 to $250 million range just for the rights before any of the costs for production or talent or any of that stuff factor into it, which is pretty nuts. And the budget for, you know, a season of television like this could, you know, be in the $100 to $150 million range just for one season. So, I mean, Amazon is spending some serious cash here. They are obviously looking for their version of Game of Thrones, which is sort of a cyclical situation here because clearly George R.R. Martin took some inspiration from Tolkien to create Game of Thrones. So, yeah, I mean, we don't really know. We know that it's going to be before Fellowship of the Ring, and that's it. So does that mean this could be another adaptation of The Hobbit, because that is a prequel to the Lord of the Rings trilogy? Does that mean it's going to go way back, all the way to the beginning of the creation of Middle-earth, and tackle all that kind of stuff that appears in Tolkien's The Silmarillion, which is this really, really dense history of all of these wars and races and, you know, intrigue and political, you know, goings on.
Have you ever tried to read that book?
No, my wife has read the whole trilogy, and she just got it as a gift not too long ago. So I'm going to let her sort of take a crack at it and then let me know if it's worth me trying to dive in, because I feel like only really, really hardcore Tolkien fans have been able to sort of crack that nut. From my understanding, it's like the
dense
part. Yeah, it's like the part of the Bible where it's like this person begat this person who then begat this person. And it's just like really dry and like really sort of mind bending and like tough to read, tough to like sit through and keep all the names straight and all of that stuff. But, you know, George R. R. Martin and HBO have been able to take that sort of historical angle and make it super compelling with Game of Thrones. So there's definitely potential for something that reads as a little dry on the page in The Silmarillion to become, you know, to get fleshed out into this epic, compelling fantasy story on Amazon. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I think that they would have to flesh out like little characters and little mentions and use basically the world as the canvas to make this work, because it doesn't seem like there is enough in those ancillary books to make a series with, you know, a main group of characters. Like, I feel like they're going to have to invent the stories and, you know, have the books be, you know, the world that the books created and kind of foretold be the thing. HT, do you have any thoughts on this? Are you a fan of the Lord of the Rings series?
I am a fan, but not as hardcore as many of my friends. I've read all of the books and Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, but not the Silmarillion. It's very daunting to me. I just hope that that Amazon doesn't take a misguided angle and try to insert lots of sex and violence into Lord of the Rings. I mean, violence, fine, but Lord of the Rings itself is kind of... is the polar opposite, really, of Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones takes this high fantasy series and turns it into this character study that has lots of nudity and all this gratuitousness. But Lord of the Rings is very much kind of stodgy. So I don't know. I think that Amazon is very obviously trying to make a bid for their own version of Game of Thrones. I just don't hope they try to over Game of Thrones it.
Yeah, and there's one more thing maybe that's worth mentioning, and that Jacob Hall, the managing editor slash film, pointed this out to me, that the Tolkien estate was famously not really a fan of Peter Jackson's movie trilogy. So they are involved with this show. So I feel like that signals a potential shift in tone for this adaptation. What exactly that means, I'm not quite sure, but I don't know if it's going to look and feel like Peter Jackson's movies have been ported down to the small screen. So that is kind of an interesting thing. Like, what do the Tolkien people think that a Lord of the Rings show should be like? And that, I guess, we're about to find out pretty soon.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, with everybody talking about all this, some person on Twitter mentioned, you know, when are we going to see the Harry Potter TV series? Because that is now inevitable, right? With Star Wars getting a TV show, with Lord of the Rings getting a TV show, I feel like if it's not a Harry Potter TV show that actually adapts all the years into you know, television, it could be a show based in that world. HT, you're a big fan of the Potterverse, right?
What do you think about that? Yeah, I think that Harry Potter could actually work even better in a TV series format, because there are so many details that are lost in translation to the big screen. Although I hope that they wait a little bit longer to adapt it to television. Hopefully a BBC series. J.K. Rowling is very loyal to her home and paying taxes and everything like that, because she was so dependent on welfare when she was a budding writer. So I think it would be nice to see it on the BBC, and I hope that maybe they would wait long enough so that Daniel Radcliffe can play an older character. I don't know, maybe Dumbledore or someone. So
I don't think Radcliffe wants any of that. I think he's so out of the Harry Potter movies, and I think that's interesting with BBC. I think it could be a co-production. Because I think they're going to need more money than that. What were you saying?
Do you think Warner Brothers? I believe Warner Brothers still owns the rights to the Harry Potter property at this point. Do you think that with Disney creating their own streaming service, that Warner Brothers won't be too far behind? That they could create their own, you know, proprietary streaming platform and then do a similar thing to what Disney's about to do with live action Star Wars and make a live action Harry Potter show, you know, exclusive to a WB streaming service?
I just get the feeling that a year down the line, we're going to be referencing this episode and your prediction. Like, I feel like this is a no-brainer if you're Warner Brothers, but who knows? Ben, you need to actually leave us right now.
I do.
Because you're going to do interviews with the Disaster Artist, filmmakers, and cast. So we'll let you go. Where can we find more work?
You can find me at slashfilm.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Ben Pears.
Bye, Ben.
All right. See you guys.
See ya.
And while all these companies are trying to get into streaming services, trying to get you to pay a premium for their exclusive content, turns out that there's a new rumor that Amazon might be developing a ad-supported way to view their exclusive content. Ad Age is reporting that Amazon is developing a free ad-supported complement to its Prime streaming service. While Roku and Vudu offer some streaming content for free, Amazon diving into this particular realm feels a bit like a big move for that company. And it also seems like a step backwards because, you know, we're so used to that being on network television. And, you know, I feel like Hulu wasn't progressive because, you know, they kind of looked at things as like the way they were and not the way they should be. What do you think about Amazon basically coming out with a version of Prime that people can watch their content but ad supported? Is that a step in the right direction or a step backwards?
It's interesting. It feels like they're definitely trying to ape Hulu, which is seeing its own sort of success this year with the Emmy-winning Handmaid's Tale. So I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of ads, but I won't avoid them, I guess you would say. I understand ads as being very essential to finance and everything, but yeah. I'm not really sure why Amazon would need it if they already have Amazon Prime and a very strong subscription service. So yeah, it does seem redundant. I'm not really sure why they're doing this move.
And it's just very confusing. I feel like everybody I know has Amazon Prime already because it's such a good value just from the shipping aspect of things. And then you get all that content for free. But I mean, you mentioned ads, like, you know, if there is a way for me to pay to get rid of ads, like Hulu has a extra premium that you can pay to get rid of ads, I pay for that because, you know, I'd rather my time, I feel, is worth more money than that $5 a month or whatever it is. And I've also said, you know, I pay for YouTube Red, which, you know, avoids all the ads and all the YouTube clips everywhere, not even just on YouTube, but on my phone everywhere. So I'm willing to pay to get rid of ads. I don't know. This just seems like a step backwards to me. But
yeah,
maybe there's a lot of people out there that want to, you know, watch, you know, these Amazon shows, but aren't willing to pay for Prime.
So I'm the complete opposite of you. I do not have Amazon Prime. I sometimes use my mom's account. Like I just log into that to ship something to myself.
By the way, you can hook up, because you have a family member that has Amazon Prime, you can go into your Amazon settings and become a member of their family, and you will basically have Amazon Prime. Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. I guess I do kind of have Amazon Prime then.
So if you set it up, you will be all set.
All right. Well, that's good to know. But yeah, I don't subscribe to YouTube Red. I don't pay the extra $5 for Hulu. So I'm just incredibly cheap. Ads don't bother me all too much. I did sign up for Spotify Premium, so I wouldn't have to listen to ads. But I kind of just sometimes use ads to, you know, do cooking or something or get some glass of water. I don't really have any sort of animosity towards them. But I don't understand people who would actually actively seek out a streaming service for ads. I'm not really sure if those people exist.
It makes me wonder if there is a future in this. Like, are we, you know, a year or two away from getting a version of Netflix that everybody can watch, but it has ads, you know, it has commercial breaks and stuff?
So kind of like how people use TV as sort of white noise in the background. We'll just like leave it on. That's interesting. Maybe that's what Amazon Prime is trying to, Amazon is trying to go for.
Yeah. Also in the news, a Spider-Man spinoff, Morbius the Living Vampire, is being developed by Sony and Power Ranger writers. You wrote this up for the site. Why?
You know, that's the question I was asking the entire time while writing this, and I do not know the answer to that. But apparently we have a new Sony spinoff in the Spider-Man-less Spider-Man cinematic universe, which includes Venom and Silver and Black, which is the Black Cat, Silver Sable movie. And so the newest one into that sort of strange cabal of films is Morbius the Living Vampire, which is not a character I was quite familiar with. But
I read Spider-Man comics, not a lot, but, you know, I've read a bunch of different trades I have in my collection, and I don't know anything about this character.
But yeah, his title is, I elicited a very strong reaction, I think. And the fact that the spinoff is being developed or being penned by the Power Rangers writing duo, Burke Sharpless and Matt Sazama, which is a strange combination, no matter how you think of it. It's just a whole bevy of elements that are like you said, why? But I guess it's a sort of Sony's way of just throwing more ideas at the wall to see if they stick. It seems that they're trying to go hone in on the anti-hero element for a lot of these Spider-Man connected properties for their cinematic universe. Remember, they wanted to start the universe off with a Sinister Six sort of Suicide Squad style movie. But then instead they're using Venom as the first kickoff point for this universe, which is not yet named. I'm not sure what it would be called. This universe without Spider-Man.
Yeah, I don't know if you can even come up with a title for it. But, you know, it is interesting that they are taking a different approach where everybody's trying to copy Marvel. Mm-hmm. They are kind of taking a different approach, and that, I think, is to be commended, maybe. All of these sound like such bad ideas. I almost wonder if this is a play to, like, you know, Disney, you know, is in talks to buy Fox. Maybe Sony is just, like, you know, trying to do whatever they can with the Spider-Man universe to try to get Disney to buy them. Because, you know... If Disney does not buy them, they are going to further ruin the Spider-Man brand. I'm obviously joking, but I don't know. What do you think? Do you think that these movies are things that people are actually going to want to see?
Maybe out of morbid curiosity. As someone who is a big fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is itself a ridiculous title, I won't begrudge Morbius his own very strange epithet. So maybe Morbius will be successful. It could be just weird enough that it will be like a pulpy B-movie ancillary like superhero movie. Sharpless and Sazama have had sort of supernatural experience before. They penned Dracula Untold for Universal, which was also notably a failed building block for their own cinematic universe. So maybe that doesn't bode well after all. But I don't know. It could be either or. Venom, I think, is just like in the same boat because it has such great stars, but is such a strange solo movie to start a cinematic universe off with.
For sure. And last up, we have a bunch of early buzz for a film and a TV show. We got Justice League, which the first social embargo reviews hit on Friday. And today we have The Punisher on Netflix. I'll start off with Justice League because it's a film that I got to see a couple weeks back. And I want to say it is better than expected, but it's not a home run. The interaction between that core Justice League team can be a lot of fun in the same way, you know, the Avengers interacting with each other and like, those fun moments in like, you know, Captain America Civil War, that kind of stuff is a lot of fun. The film, I don't think is, has its problems. Obviously the villain is, you know, generic CG villain guy. And the plot is kind of a little bit weak. But Flash and Aquaman are, you know, they steal the show. The film will send the DCEU in a hopeful direction where the brand should be. And I think most people that see this movie are going to enjoy it. I'm not going to say that they're going to love it. But I think everybody will agree that it's better than Batman vs. Superman and Suicide Squad, which is a good thing. Right.
So would you say that it was obvious that this movie was sort of salvaged by the reshoots, or were there any sort of delineating differences between what was originally filmed or reshoots or anything like that?
Well, we could talk about this after the movie gets out, but I would say that I was on set of the movie, so I got to see them film some stuff, and some of the stuff that you would think is Joss Whedon is actually Zack Snyder, and, you know, he was trying to do a more funny movie, or more, do you know what I mean? Like a more fun movie. But you can definitely see things that were reshot. You know, obviously there's moments that you've seen in the trailers where Ben Affleck looks notably larger now than he was when he shot the original footage. And there's, I don't know, it's rather obvious what was reshot. And I don't think Joss Whedon saved the movie. I mean, I don't know what the movie was before Joss Whedon came on board it, but I would still say that it very much feels still like a Zack Snyder movie. So if you're if you're thinking that, you know, you're going to go in and you're going to see a Joss Whedon movie, I think that's probably incorrect. On the Joss Whedon scale of things, I would put this at not as good as The Avengers, but better than Age of Ultron. So
it's a very small sort of, well, that's okay. That's good to know. Better than Age of Ultron.
it's firmly in the middle of that. And, you know, on the site, we have quotes from a lot of different people that saw the movie. And I think my opinion kind of reflects their opinion, but you could go read their opinions. I should note that I was invited to go to the London junket of this movie and see the movie in London. I did not accept that. Some of these people did, not to cloud those quotes, but just so you know, I did not go on a trip to London for this movie. These opinions are based on a screening I saw in Los Angeles. Just to say that. Okay, so let's move on to The Punisher, which has actually been one of my more anticipated Marvel Netflix TV series, because I kind of loved this character on Daredevil. HT, please tell me it's good.
So it's both good and bad. I haven't seen a Marvel Netflix series that was quite so polarizing as The Punisher is, because critics are either claiming it's the best MCU series released on Netflix or it's the worst, which is very interesting, just extreme reactions on both sides. So it's been criticized definitely for being overly long. It has 13 episodes and kind of falls to the common sort of Marvel formula of having too little story stretched over too many episodes. And it's also sort of ill-timed too. Well, not sort of ill-timed, definitely so. Coming off the tails of two mass shootings in the U.S. in recent weeks. So it was pushed back. The premiere was pushed back after the events of the mass shooting. But then there was one that happened in Texas only a couple weeks ago. So there's never, I think, a time for this series to really be timely, unless we were in a very dark timeline. So so we are seeing lots of people praising it for being extremely secluded from the rest of the Marvel universe. So it really goes grim and gritty. There is no real connection to other Marvel series or Marvel events outside of maybe Karen Page popping in every now and then. But it also has a really interesting examination of psychological trauma for soldiers and questions about morality and philosophy, which I think we got a little taste of too in Daredevil season 2 during their Frank Castle and Matt Murdock's whole rooftop debate. I was also a huge fan of Jon Bernthal in Daredevil season 2. I think he definitely stole the show. And it's no surprise, really, that Netflix immediately greenlit a Punisher spinoff because he was just a force of nature. The critics definitely raved about his performance as well, saying it's one of the saving graces of this series. And across the board, even critics who disliked the series raved about Jon Bernthal. So at least we'll have that to look forward to. But yeah, it's a big mixed bag of things with The Punisher. It's either incredibly dull, very sluggish, or it's very thoughtful and thought-provoking. So I'm not really sure which is which until I finally see it myself. And I feel like that's probably the conclusion you'll have to come to you, Peter, and you, the viewers or listeners.
Yeah. I think it would be very hard to watch a show like this today and not have, you know, the events that have happened kind of cloud your opinion one way or another. It's interesting that, you know, people now think 13 episodes is long for a show, because I remember, you know, 10 years ago, you know, 24 was 24 episodes. Lost was 20 episodes. You know, that was the normal for everything, because everything was, you know, mostly network television, and mm-hmm. kind of these premium networks, you know, brought it down to, you know, 13 or whatnot. And Netflix with, you know, Stranger Things is doing less than that. I'm wondering if streaming services, now that, you know, you're dumping all the episodes, you know, it used to be up with the ad money. You wanted to keep people coming back week after week. So if you had 24 weeks, that's 6 months of, you know, people coming to your network to watch that thing and see the ads. Now that it's not that, I wonder if it's more, if it's better for a company like Netflix or Amazon to make a series, you know, 9 or 10 episodes, because, you know, obviously that's cheaper to produce, right? And creatively, probably more freeing, because, you know, the creatives don't have to stretch it out. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we're going to see a lot more of that. I hope so.
Yeah, I definitely think the Netflix, like the overly long episodes, runs for Netflix is a common problem, not just in the Marvel shows, but in all Netflix shows. There's kind of a lull in the mid-season arc. So I think it's a lot of it has to do with changes in storytelling. These peak prestige television shows aren't so much telling episode of the week stories like the previous, like old series were, or they're not even telling serialized storytelling so much. They're just kind of doing movies in 8 hours or 12 hours. Yeah. So I think that's the case. It would be interesting if they cut down the episodes or tried to change their storytelling style a little bit. So we'll see.
Well, HT, I'm glad to have you back. Where can people find more of your work online?
I am glad to be back too. You can find me on slashfilm.com, and I'm on Twitter at htranbui. I haven't tweeted recently, but I will start up again now. And I also have a podcast, the Millennial Falcon Podcast, on iTunes.
You can find me at slashfilm on Twitter. You can find all the articles we mentioned today on slashfilm linked in the show notes. This podcast, Slash Film Daily, is published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. Please subscribe, go to iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review. That helps us out quite a bit. Tell your friends, and we will see you tomorrow.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.